The main driving force is ownership. It'll be the tribes. It'll be ours. I mean, we can proudly say, hey, that's Chilkoot's.
Chilkoot Indian Association is planning its new building project, and volunteers spend a week with the birds at Mud Bay. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friednauer. Those stories and more up next. Haines will see the construction of a new building in downtown by the end of the year if the Chilkoot Indian Association project receives the governor's approval. The capital budget passed by the state legislature last week included $1.3 million for a new Chilkoot Indian Association building planned for a lot owned by the tribe between 2nd and 3rd Avenues, across from the Haines Visitor Center. CIA is still doing survey work for the project, but has a site plan completed and is ready to begin work on the building as soon as the governor approves the capital budget, said Tribal Administrator David Berry.
We're looking for September to start working pretty seriously on it. We want to have everything ready so that when we receive notification from the state saying, here's your money, we can start the next day.
The tribe is contributing $650,000 to the project that will provide offices and meeting space for the tribal council and offer more accessibility for its members. The offices are currently located in an upstairs portion of a Main Street building, accessible only by stairs.
Our membership in the area here is getting mature, so I hate to see people walk up these stairs. So that was another driving force, but I think the main driving force is ownership. It'll be the tribes, it'll be ours. I mean, we can proudly say, hey, that's Chilkoot's, you know.
The building is designed to reflect the layout of a tribal house, said Barry, with house posts on each corner and a 40-foot totem pole planned for the front. There will be space in the building to highlight Tlingit art pieces and to house cultural items the tribe is working to repatriate. The project will also utilize a commercial pellet heat system. The tribe currently uses a wood pellet system for heat and hot water at its rental units at its Chilkoot Estates subdivision. Wood pellet heating is an area CIA is looking to expand into with the possible construction of a small wood pellet factory in the area. A feasibility study just completed for the tribe supports the viability of the project, which could provide heat for other businesses, including borough buildings.
We have just completed a study on the feasibility of putting in a small wood pellet factory within the area, and it looks like it'll work. It won't be a big one, maybe 2,500 tons a year, roughly. But, yeah, it proves out that we could do it and provide a service for the community at the same time, provide employment for the tribe, and make some money.
Barry said the pellets provide a substantial saving cost over heating with diesel. He said a 40-pound bag of pellets equals just over 2 gallons of diesel heating fuel. CIA retails the pellets for $6.50 a bag. Diesel in Haines was priced at $4.73 a gallon on Tuesday. CIA is currently getting wood pellets from a factory in Tacoma, Washington, Barry said. But the feasibility study suggests the tribe explore a partnership with the Champaign and Aishiak First Nations in Canada. The wood from the First Nations territory in the Yukon and northern British Columbia would provide drier and better burning pellets than local sources, Barry said. Roll out of bed at 6 a.m., pour a thermos of coffee, pull on the boots, and slog through the head of Mud Bay. This is what 10 volunteers spent last week doing with their mornings as they took part in an intensive training to help Tok Chinook Watershed Council become an official bird banding station. Pam Randles with Tok Chinook organized the training. It's a necessary step in becoming an official permitted banding site through the Bird Banding Laboratory with the U.S. Geological Survey. Only one other observatory exists in the state. Once permitted, the Bird Observatory will allow staff and volunteers to set up periodic banding sites. Randall said one banding station will focus on monitoring breeding birds. The other will focus on collecting data on migrating birds and their activity in the Chilkat Valley.
I think probably most people in the valley suspect that the Chilkat River is a major flyway, but that's not how it's recorded nationally. The current wisdom is that coastal birds migrate along the coast and interior birds migrate through the interior and they don't cross over. And yet we see a lot of birds going right up the pass. So part of what we're trying to learn is that in fact a flyway or not.
Randall said the banding will also help determine if bird populations are changing due to global warming. Research from the Audubon Society's Christmas Bird Count has shown that several species have moved their winter ranges 200 to 400 miles north of their usual range in the last several years. Haines volunteers have participated in the Audubon Christmas Count for more than 30 years. But banding stations will provide even more data, Randall said. The banded birds can be tracked in a national database, and the information is shared between many agencies and organizations.
We've been working with Bird Studies Canada and with Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game and Puget Sound Bird Observatory, and we'll, you know, it's a network of people who are all working to share data and share information in the sort of the truest sense of science.
For the training, Randall's and volunteers set up each morning for a week at the 7 acres homestead at the head of the bay. With the help of a trainer from the Institute of Bird Populations in California, the volunteers learned how to set up nets, extract birds from nets, band and release them. The banding also required taking detailed data from each bird. The volunteers spent the afternoon in lectures to learn more about data collection.
First of all, you band them, and then you take several points of data, a whole bunch of points of data. You look for signs of age and sex, and it's a puzzle because in most cases, you need more than one piece of evidence to make a certain diagnosis.
Handling the birds takes care and focus, Randall says. The nets are checked every 15 or 20 minutes so that the birds are not immobilized too long. Then the volunteers must keep the birds calm and warm. The birds get easily stressed and can lose body temperature. Volunteers, like Jedediah Blum Evett, learned how to keep the birds warm in their hands or jackets while waiting to be banded and released. He explained the reasoning as he walked from a net back to the banding station with a robin tucked inside his coat to keep it warm.
So one of the reasons we're careful to keep our hands warm and keep the birds warm is just to keep them healthier and make them that much more able to escape and survive happily afterwards we let them go.
Once permitted, Randall said the observatory will be able to draw from the local pool of volunteers, as well as other trained banders in southeast Alaska.
There are quite a few permitted banders in the state, but not bird observatories. And so there are several banders in Juneau, like Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife. Some just have been banders, period, for their own self. That's what they do. And they have offered us support so that... during that migration season, it's really intense. You're going 7 days a week, 6 hours a day, plus data stuff after that. And so it's nice to have, that's why I wanted a larger class. We have more people to call on because it can be exhausting, really, really exhausting.
Also coming up is the Talk Chinook Annual Birdathon Week beginning April 29th. Visit talkchinook.org for more information. This is Margaret Friednauer for KHNS News. Thanks for listening to your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. How much do U.S. consumers know or care about seafood sustainability and eco-labels? I'll tell you more after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by the Marine Conservation Alliance. Learn more at marineconservationalliance.org.
Sustainable is a big buzzword in the seafood industry, especially for big corporate buyers. Alaska is hands down the world leader for healthy, well-managed fisheries, but sustainability is not the biggest selling point for U.S. consumers. A nationwide survey by Chicago-based Perishables Group, done for Seafood Business and SeafoodSource.com, aimed to learn if messages about sustainability and eco-labels were resonating with buyers and influencing their purchases. The answer? Not really. Topmost on the minds of the 1,000 survey respondents was food safety, followed by price. Customers also look for wild or farmed identifiers and where their seafood comes from. About one-third claimed to be knowledgeable about seafood sustainability, while 40% said they knew nothing or very little about the concept. More than one-third believe farm-raised fish is more sustainable than wild-caught, and that farmed shrimp, catfish, and tilapia are the best sustainable choices. Only 19% said they recalled seeing any type of label or message identifying seafood as sustainable in supermarkets. Conversely, 62% said they recall messages about wild or farmed fish at retail and restaurants. In terms of organizations that promote sustainability, 46% said they were familiar with the World Wildlife Fund. Only 5% were familiar with the Marine Stewardship Council. Over half of those surveyed said they eat some type of seafood at least every other week, with one-third eating seafood weekly. Survey analysts likened the results of the study to a glass half full, saying the fact that from the 1990s, the number of consumers who do look for sustainable seafood is a big change that is likely to grow. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.